another episode of Speaking the Lawn, the official podcast of streakingthelawn.com. Once again, my name is Pearson. All of my blog friends are gone across the Atlantic Ocean or on spring break. And so, you know, it's just me bringing in a returning guest to the show today to help me talk about our Who's. It is author, alum of Virginia, super fan of the basketball team, dear friend of mine, Zach Carter. Welcome back to Speaking the Lawn. Thanks for joining me.
So good to be speaking the lawn with you, Pierce.
That's what we do here. The Who's, man, we text so much about this team in these games. Actually, let me first off say, huge win for the women's team last night, defeating number 5 Virginia Tech on senior night. A lot of local talent on the team, not just local talent, of course, but Coach Mox has a fun flavor of local talent on this squad that is racking up top 25 wins. We want to, of course, give them a shout out and props for breaking the attendance record for a women's sporting event in the Commonwealth. And of course, taking down the rival Hokies on senior night. That is massively awesome. So congrats to
and
them.
Coach Mox has got a great culture going on the women's side. Yeah. And you can just feel good things happening for the women's team, and you know better things are on the way. It's a really exciting moment.
No doubt. But you know, we do focus most of our efforts here on the podcast to lamenting about the men's team, so we can turn our attention there. I'm laughing just because, you know, let's set the stage a little, right? Like, anyone listening to this is following the men's basketball team. That's why you're tuning in. You're obviously clued into all of this, but I think it's handy to get a little bit of a recap, because we're going to talk about the recent games. We're going to talk about where they are in the conference standing and how that compares to where we were thinking as expectations, you know, as far as expectations coming into the season. Amusingly, they're sort of right where we thought or hope, or you know, somewhere in the middle where I thought, but obviously the mojo, the fandom is upset, the vibes are all off. So it is funny to compare the actual numbers of where they are to how we feel about things going. So in starting that conversation, Virginia has lost 4 of 6, right? Not good. Swooning into the postseason play. Their wins include, you know, a bucket over Wake Forest and a couple of buckets, 4 points, on the road at Boston College. Neither win should be dismissed. Wake is a good team, played them obviously really tough on the road, and, you know, Virginia took care of business in that game at home. Got blown out by Virginia Tech, blown out by North Carolina, and blown out by Duke since then. So obviously we don't want to discredit, you know, a couple wins that were a couple possessions away from being losses, because then truly the sky is falling if that's the case. But, you know, it's basketball, it's sports. Sometimes the close games go in your favor, sometimes they do not. But the way the team has lost in these three essentially rivalry games, obviously Virginia Tech's a rivalry, but I think as an upper echelon ACC team, you know, UNC and Duke both sort of qualify as bigger than the normal game, bigger than a normal ACC game. Getting blown out by these three teams has been just so distressing as a fan and as a blogger and podcaster, right? And it's hard to see all the pieces that have gone wrong, you know, or how they're going to turn correctly. My only hesitation there is obviously we've seen this team play pretty well this season, so there's hope that that could come back. But you factor in that it's been nearly a month of this poor play going into March, where the team has a history of underperforming since 2019, at least, right? Where are the reasons for optimism, Zach? Where are we standing as fans who want to engage and want to watch and want to cheer for this team? Obviously, we're all going to watch, right? You know, no one's not tuning in, but why should I not be cynical in the next couple of weeks, if at all?
Well, I think there's a lot of one trick for Virginia fans is that between 2014 and 2021, Virginia was the premier team in the ACC, which was the premier conference in college basketball. It was arguably the best program in the country across this period. And despite this extraordinary run of success, Virginia could also, and the Virginia fan, most importantly, could also sort of play underdog throughout that entire run. The style of play and the way that Tony Bennett and his staff recruited meant that even though Virginia kept racking up wins, the media and a lot of the sort of blue chip programs were did not accept the program as among that very elite tier in college basketball.
Blue bloods, or even just talking about who's the best program we're on right now.
I mean, people said Virginia was fake for like 7 years. It was a
Yeah.
long time. And people don't say that that period was fake anymore. What they say now about Tony Bennett is that he is underperforming or that he's disappointing. And this year is particularly odd because I don't think the expectations were terribly high going into the season. I think, as you mentioned in your introduction, you told most of us that we're going to be a bubble team in the top three or four of the ACC. Say that's a great win in a rebuilding year. I think the thing that's really difficult about this season and also last season is how inconsistent the teams have been. I think most Virginia fans at this point, you know, we're okay with winning ugly. We're okay with ugly basketball as it's traditionally understood. You can't love Virginia and not love good defense. You can't love Virginia and be averse to the occasional scoring drought, right? Even in the peak years, you'd see 5, 6 minutes pass without scoring sometimes. What's been different the last 2 years has been the inconsistency and watching the team defense fall apart. And the blowouts that happened, you know, I think the North Carolina game was dispiriting because we just couldn't score. But the defense did show up to North Carolina this year. What's been really dispiriting over the last, you know, few weeks stretch has not been that the team can't score, although that is, you know, that's not fun for fans. It's been watching the defense just get ripped to shreds by a good team like Duke, and then by okay teams like, you know, Boston College put up a lot of points on Virginia the other night, and of course Virginia Tech just boat racing us. That's unusual, and it's unusual at this point in the year. You would typically, you know, a Tony Bennett team, whatever its flaws are, the defense is getting tighter and tighter over the course of the year, and you can always rely on that defense to be there in a pinch. And it's not just this year where things have really fallen off a cliff. I mean, last year, team looked great in November, looked terrible in December, looked great in January, looked pretty rough in February. That is this year feels like more of a roller coaster than last year, I think, because it's the shifts are game to game rather than you know, month to month. But the inconsistency is there, and it's not easy to pin on, like, you know, early in the season when Virginia would have a bad game, Coach Bennett would say, look at our experience. You know, we just don't have what we're used to. By the end of the season, you know, these guys have been playing together for a full year. Inexperience doesn't seem to be a plausible explanation. And when this is the second straight year you've had the inconsistency, it's a totally different set of guys. At some point you gotta say that there's something about the way the team is being coached that is not that is not adding up. Now, if you want a reason for optimism, I just gave you a whole lot of reasons for pessimism, right? That means that that it can be fixed, right? If it's a coaching problem, the coaches can do something about it. I don't think the problem is just an outrageous talent deficit. You saw a lot of this commentary during the Duke game. You've seen a lot of nasty comments about some of the guys on social media when they have off nights. I think this team is actually quite talented. I think when it has come together, they have looked very, very good. I think the coaching staff has got to figure out how to get the most out of these players playing together as a unit. There are a few obvious things to me. I mean, well, they seem obvious to me. Look, Tony Bennett does magic with basketball, and he knows he will forget more about basketball on a Tuesday than I will learn in my entire life. But
That's
there's
a
been a
pretty good disclaimer for this podcast, though. We all talk within the realm of knowing that about ourselves compared to actual basketball coaches.
Right, and there are people who are angry at Tony Bennett, and if you look at social media enough, I mean, you can find people calling for him to be replaced it. I mean, these people need to find something else to be angry about. I mean, even in a rough year like this, you're looking at 20 wins. You're looking at a double bye in the ACC tournament, and I mean, more likely than not, an NCAA tournament berth where we can't be upset because we'll be a low seed. So, you know, there's still this season by historical standards is still going to be at least okay. But all that said, I mean, you know, look, it for a couple of different teams. I mean, both Pitt and Duke, it seemed like every time they would run a high ball screen, we would hard hedge, and it would be points. And that it is very strange to see that happening in multiple games with different teams and with different lineups. That seems like something that can be dealt with. I also think, you know, one of the things that seemed to work pretty well in the North Carolina game was putting Elijah Gertrude in the game. You know, he doesn't have great shooting stats, but you could see there was just sort of a different energy to the team when he was on the floor. And there are a lot of these intangibles that seem to be off with this team. And suddenly with Gertrude in the game, the intangibles seem to be like kind of moving in the team's direction. I'm not at practice. You know, I don't know why, you know, why Tony Bennett likes the lineups that he likes. But there are a few things where you know, this guy can get a bucket. You put him in, he can get a bucket. Like, he can do it.
Or at least he's going to try and get a bucket, you know? Like, it's even sometimes it feels like that, like just some aggression.
I'd confuse the defenses. I mean, I think to some extent, one of the issues that's emerged is that the offense has become too predictable. And we've seen success in previous years, even with less offensively gifted teams, or maybe not less offensively gifted than this team, but some of Tony Bennett's not ideal offensive teams, that when he just switches up the scheme a little, it becomes harder to defend. You know, the game that we played against North Carolina last year, all of a sudden we went small ball, and small ball ended up not being a terrific lineup for us over the course of the year, but just mixing it up one night, we could beat a good team. It seems even against BC, you know, there were some lineups that we ran against Boston College that were different. We're doing different things. I mean, different screening actions for Isaac McNealy. Lineups with, you know, where Rhodey was in as an additional shooter with McNealy and Jake Groves. Stuff just worked. I don't, you know, maybe because it was brilliant scheming, but I think also just because teams weren't used to defending what we were throwing at them. And Tony Bennett is an outstanding X's and O's coach. Absolutely outstanding. One of the best in the game. You look at the different types of things that he would draw up for Kyle Guy. Kyle Guy was an elite shooter, but they were constantly running different actions for him to get him shots. It wasn't just sides over and over again. So my reason for optimism here is that Tony's one of the best in the games at this. In the game at this, and this is a coaching issue. This is something that we have a very good coach who is at the helm, who is certainly more capable of fixing it, and who I trust to fix it than anybody else in the country.
And you know, they've got this week to prepare for senior day, and gosh, you hope, you know, they can handle Georgia Tech at home. Obviously, they played pretty well most of the time at home. And Georgia Tech, they've shown that they have their number. So let's continue the theme of optimism. I assume they take care of business there.
Yes.
But then you've got that. You've got a double bye, almost certainly. I was looking at the tiebreakers, which are the head-to-head. And for the ACC seeding, I don't think they've technically mathematically clinched. If they win against Georgia Tech, they have. If even if they lose, it seems pretty likely Virginia's going to be a top four seed in DC for the tournament. So point being, you have some days to work on this before getting into the postseason. And even you know, if you can win against Georgia Tech and win a game at DC, you're probably on the right side of the bubble. And then you've got a week to prepare for, you know, the greatest tournament in sports as far as I'm concerned. So
And
there's
DC's a great
time, is
place
my
for
point.
and DC is a great place for the tournament for Virginia. You know, Greensboro is always tough because you have half of the ACC within a few miles, but DC is you know, basically home to about
Even
half of
playing
all
field,
of
at
the
least.
Yeah, and I think so there is time. It would be nice to have two more wins on the plate before Selection Sunday.
Yeah. And there's time to rest too. I mean, you look at McNeely and gosh, the Duke game, that's tough. I feel like he played pretty well against Boston College, so it hasn't been like too rough a stretch, but Duke was such a poor performance for most everybody on the team. But so, no one's escaping any of that criticism. I do wonder if they had been able to beat North Carolina. That's the most disappointing result, right? Because it's a home game. It's a home game against a team you have a really strong recent history of beating when they come to the JPJ, and a statement-making win that really would have helped the resume. And like you said, the defense played really well. They just didn't take advantage of that side and come away with the W. Let's say they did play well enough to win that game. I think the conversation is very different, even with blowout losses. In two of the hardest places to play on the road, the ACC is Blacksburg and Durham, against teams that, like Blacksburg, we always seem to lose, right? And then Duke on the road. I mean, Duke is playing really, really well. So I don't think even a decent Virginia team, not that this one isn't decent, but you know what I'm saying? Like, those are two expected L's. And so the conversation, if they had been able to win that UNC game, would be a little lighter, a little friendlier. We wouldn't be just, hand-wringing about the bubble as hard. And it's almost like that was so close that they could get to that level of performance to play well enough to win that game. But
It's
we have to
the
see it.
blowouts. It's the blowouts. I mean, the North Carolina game is a tough loss, but losing other games by 25 points, when that was happening in December, like the Notre Dame game, that was dispiriting, but you could at least say, well, it's December. Watching, Cameron is a tough place to play. But historically, we played close at Cameron. I mean, almost all of the games over the last decade there have been decided by one possession or less. Now, sometimes that's a little bit misleading because I know in the national championship year we hit a shot at the buzzer to cut it to 2 points. So it was two possessions really. But I mean, not a 25 point embarrassment, right? And so the part where the North Carolina game, it hurts because the guys showed up, right? They were there. They were not mentally disconnected from the game. It's not like everybody had the flu or something. I think at the Virginia Tech game, even 2 days rest, Tony Bennett and sounded pretty sick at the press conference after that one. Blake Buchanan sounded sick as a dog after the Wake game 2 days before that. But yeah, you had plenty of time before Duke and just oof.
And this is
Feeling
uncharted
like a
territory too. Like the Virginia teams, even the ones that haven't been the champions of the conference in this decade stretch, don't get blown out multiple times,
no,
no matter who they're playing.
not this late in the year, at least. I mean, there were a couple of tough losses in 2020, the Sam Hauser and Trey Murphy year. Gonzaga and Florida State beat us pretty bad. But by the end of the year, that team looked really sharp, and if you don't have COVID weirdness, who knows what happens in the tournament. That
Oh,
year
very
they
true.
won the ACC tournament. They won the ACC
Regular season,
regular season that year, and were making noise in the tournament if they hadn't been COVID disqualified. Is that that's I mean, I think that's a really important thing to emphasize about this team, is that it's very easy to write a narrative like Virginia hasn't won an NCAA tournament game since they won the national title 5 years ago. Okay, but really the difficulties with this team and with this program have been the last 2 years. It's been a really solid program previous to that. You don't have so, it's not true that we can't recruit. It's not true that name, image, and likeness is something that Virginia just doesn't do. There's a lot of talent on this team, and what's disappointing is that we've seen flashes of that talent over the course of this year. And watching a team that can put up 80 points in Tallahassee, put up 43 in Durham. I mean, Tallahassee is a tough place to play too. And the refs were against us the whole game, right?
Yeah, that was brutal. Like you say, if this happens in November or December, you're going, okay, well, there's new faces. There's a couple gaps in what, we would want as far as the roster here, but there's no real excuse for this roster to be losing that poorly when you have somebody who's talked about as a lottery pick or at least a first round pick in Dunn. Some people saying first round pick for Reese, but definitely a draftee. Somebody's going, to make it to the NBA at least initially in Reese. You've got McNeely, who is not new, who has shown capability to shoot 50% from three. You've got a fifth year in Jordan Minor, who at this point now obviously has shown he can play defense in the system and is a large part of why we've gotten more from this team. It's not all, and I don't want to pick on Andrew Rohde, but like Rohde might be the example of like expectations were pretty high, and then there was a bit of a challenge to playing in the ACC, and he hasn't shown everything we would want of him yet. Although I think it's funny, we could do a whole podcast on why Rohde's getting the minutes he's getting, despite maybe not having the offensive production that we would like to see from him. It's pretty obvious. Duke game aside, let's throw all of that away. But it's obvious even in recent games why Rohde is playing where he is to me and what he brings without hitting shots.
Rohde's had some off nights. He's had some off
Yeah.
nights, but he plays really solid defense.
For sure.
I think one of the challenges with Rohde may be that we're not using him the right way. I mean, he had some struggles early on adjusting to the intensity of the defensive pressure when he had the ball in his hands. But he's very good on the ball. He's an outstanding passer, and he obviously has a mind for the game that is. It's like the great point guards at in UVA history, like Reese, like Ty, like London. Tony, obviously, I feel like it's very clear when you watch him on both sides of the floor why Tony Bennett wants him in the game. But again, there are weirdnesses about this team, right? I mean, Reese is going to be in the NBA, and Reese is going to shoot a lot better than 60% from the free throw line in the NBA. Why is Reese shooting 60% from the free throw line? What happened in that, the weight game? We only scored 49 points. It was decided by one possession, but it really shouldn't have been a close game. I mean, we
No.
went 1 for 11 from the free throw line, and it's really worse than that because we missed all three of the one and ones on the front end. So it's really like 1 for 14. I mean, that's not just having shooting troubles, right? Like that is there's something going on in our in the brains here that is not right. And that doesn't mean that these players are mentally unsound or unfit for college basketball. It means they're being coached in such a way that their confidence is shaky. They're being combined in a way that's got them rattled. And that was a home game. It's not like the crowd had taken it out of them in that game.
In some aspects, free throws, I think at home, you can almost feel the everybody's like tense, right? Like the whole, you got 10,000 people all going like, oh,
Oh my
or like
God.
laughing, like, or like, oh, here we go again. So yeah, that might be the one instance where it's still hard. The crowd is sort of against you. I do want to talk about Jacob Gross because I think we saw such great flashes for him in that winning streak, 9 points Louisville, 18 points Notre Dame, 17 against Clemson on the road. Big reason why they won that game on the road. 12 points against Miami, but and then 10 points against FSU. Then 6 games in a row where only one of them is he in double figures again, and that's at BC. He puts up 0 against UNC, 0 against Wake, 2 on the road of Virginia Tech, 5 at Duke. This isn't like, it's Grove's fault that they're losing the games or anything like that, but just another indication that like when this team is playing poorly, they're not getting production outside of Reese Beekman. And Reese, for as great as he is, isn't the type of player who he needs the team to play well in order to take over. Like, can he take over a game and be the guy for the team? Yes, but that team's not going to win just single-handedly on the performance of Reese Beekman if everybody else is bricking everything when he passes it to him. You know what I mean? And Gross has
No.
shown the ability to hit those shots and be really important offensively, but also on the boards for this team. I think, Minor and Groves boxing out, rebounding allows Dunn to be what Dunn, when you're talking about using the guy the right way, Ryan Dunn is one of the biggest examples of he plays one particular type of role as a power forward better than anyone in the country in some aspects. And when he gets shifted into other types of playing, he looks rudimentary. You know, he looks standard out there, and sometimes even less than standard when he's on the free throw line. Sorry, I'm not again trying not to dog a guy specifically, but as we get into like what can go right is if we get Groves where Groves wants to be and Dunn where Dunn wants to be. You know, these are puzzle pieces to the what Tony wants with this team, that when they're where we want them to be, we're successful. And when they're asked to do different other things other than that, then they look so out of place. So
No, and to some extent, we end up underutilizing our best player's best asset. I mean, Reese's best quality is Reese's mind is unique, not just on this team, but in I think recent history of Virginia basketball. And for that to let that basketball IQ fly, he's got to have guys who are being schemed for appropriately. You can make him go 1-on-3 and score 18 points a night, and he'll do it, right? But that's not the best way to get the most out of the guy. He should be a facilitator and be setting people up on complex actions and being able to read the defense. With Jacob Groves, shooters have off nights. It happens. They're streaky. If you're a 50% shooter from three, it doesn't mean that you go 3 for 6 every night. It means some nights you go 7 for 9, and some nights you go, 2 for 10. But in the case of Groves in particular, I feel like we're not scheming up 3-point looks for him. I mean, very frequently you see him coming off of screens or coming out of actions, in positions to hit a long two, or see him being I don't know if he's being encouraged to do this or whatever, but putting the ball on the floor and taking mid-range jumpers. And the guy is a lights out 3-point shooter. It has been very strange to me that since the Florida State game, basically, we have seemed incapable of running actions that focus on getting him open for the three, with the exception of the end of the BC game, where the offense did several things that were new, particularly the way they used McNealy running off of screens. They would force help defenders out of the lane. So that by moving McNealy from sort of the post to the perimeter, you'd pull help defense out of the lane. And there are a couple of really wild sequences. One where Reese was driving to the bucket, and the defender was so worried about McNealy at the 3-point line that they just abandoned the lane and let Reese go right in uncontested. At the same time, we're opening up threes for Groves in the corner, also for Rhodey in the corner. But other than that, it just doesn't seem like the offense is scheming for Jake Groves' shots, and that's just strange. I mean, it could be that defenses are playing in such a way that the schemes don't work, and so this is what is developing. But
Well, I think there's
somehow.
some of that for sure, but yeah.
But it's not like people didn't know the guy could shoot for those 8 games in the middle of the season where we couldn't lose. Same thing with Isaac McNealy. I think there's just been some sort of puzzling decisions that can be unpuzzled.
I McNealy, we look at him and we see like, okay, here's the Joe Harris, Kyle Guy. Long line of sharpshooters who could take over a game. He's a different player than both of those guys, which is an obvious statement, but he fits into that role that you want. I almost feel bad because like he's just in his second year, right? And you're comparing him to Kyle Guy, the greatest shooter this program has ever seen. You know, as far as I'm concerned, whether it be statistically accurate or not, like Kyle Guy was elite, elite, elite. And we want McNealy to get there and hope that he can, but I just don't see him filling up, a 25, 30-point game or something like that. Very few people do for Virginia, but like he doesn't seem to want to grab that opportunity. And he wants to be just a cog in their overall production of an offense, and that can be very helpful when you make your open shots, just like him and Gross have shown the ability to do. But he's not going to be like the primary scoring option at least yet. And I don't know why this is. You know, I don't know the guy and I don't know the coaches, but it just seems like he's still not as aggressive as for lack of a more nuanced way to explain it.
I will push back against you a little bit on this one
Sure.
because I think up through the Florida State game, middle of the season, you saw Isaac starting to do things that people like Joe Harris and Kyle Guy did to complement their 3-point shooting games. He was starting to get into the lane better. He was finishing better. He was drawing contact. I mean, he hit some free throws against in against Florida State that
Yes.
you know
Yeah.
I iced the game. I mean, he had a great
And
game
that
against
was the
Florida
game
State.
that he got 29. I mean, that's what I'm
Yeah,
saying. Like
and
war games like that.
wasn't all at the 3-point line either. And
Right, right, right.
you saw him when in that game when Isaac would get to the mid range, he'd put up a little floater. He could go all the way to the rack. I mean, he was doing things that you know a player like Joe Harris or Kyle Guy would do to complement their 3-point shooting. And at particularly the Florida State game, I was like, oh boy, here we go. You know, this is coming. And then, you know, I think what's been real part of the late season disappointment is like, where did that go?
Yeah.
And is that a consequence of bad scheming? Is it just a lack of confidence? Did you know all sorts of things happen that make people underperform, not just in basketball. I don't know. But yeah, it seems like that player that was about to just take the next step and become a totally dominant figure for this team, kind of stepped back and became a role player.
Yeah, I mean
And
that weight game is the last game he's made more than 4 field goals. You know what I mean? Like,
And he's a shooter. I
it's
mean,
sort of
he's a shooter.
obvious, right? Like the players aren't playing well in these losses. And so BC, he played pretty. You know, he got to where we would. You know, I would say the floor is for him, and they won. A lot of that was late when they started to have to be aggressive to answer the 3-pointers that Boston College was doing because they spent most of that game trading twos for threes or trading threes for two, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's just if it is attacking the rim, if it is getting, you know, some Ty Jerome floater going, like any of that would be really beneficial to see more consistently because, like you said, we have seen examples from it. I don't want to give up on this season, but I think a lot of the consternation about this recent swoon is also looking ahead. And you know, when we're talking about the program and why we're upset and like you said, it's an insane thing to say Tony Bennett needs to retire or I hope he retires or anything like that. But you know, part of this like, oh, I'm mad again and it's March and I'm getting used to being mad in March and now I look at next year and losing Dunn, but losing Beekman, we assume we're losing Dunn, and we're certainly losing Beekman. You go, okay, so who's the returning star power? You know, there's obviously the options for transfers, and we've had some helpful transfers, but it doesn't seem like this is the program that's going to bring in the new leading scorer transfer. You know, you're
Right,
thinking
we're not
just
going to shell up $1 million. I mean, Tony's clearly embraced Neal, but we're not going to spend $1 million to get a
Is it
3-point
we're
shooter,
not
right?
UConn, right? Like we're not
Right.
going to find a mid-major's best player and say come lead the Big East. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to look at that roster and look at the what we're losing and go, well, it's okay. We'll be more experienced and better next year. And that starts to the doom scrolling, the doom tweeting, that starts to make you sort of circle that drain, I think, in this fandom that can be pessimistic.
Yeah, moderate digression here because
Yeah.
I think Virginia fans underrate the value of having a person of Tony Bennett's character at the head of this program.
Yeah,
Because
that's fair.
we take it for granted, we're used to it. You know, it feels good to have a good person running your team. We could have Nate Oates. Nate Oates won the SEC tournament last year. You don't want to win that way. You don't want to have that in your head when you wake up in the morning. You know, I don't know anything about John Shire's personal life, but the guy has the charisma of a crying viper. You know, I don't think Duke fans wake up every day and are like, oh, it's so great that like a walking wallet is basically our mascot. You know, there's a lot about the program that feels good to root for Virginia because Tony Bennett is at the head of the program. But I don't think he's made adjustments this year the way he has in the past. I mean, if everybody remembers in the Malcolm Brogdon last year, the meltdown against Syracuse. But before that happened, if you look at Brogdon's numbers in the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, they're not great. They're not great at all. And it's because everybody in the country had figured out this was the best player in college basketball, and they were throwing double teams at him. It was really difficult. They're making it really difficult for him to get things going. And before that mess at the end of the Syracuse game, the team had adjusted. And so even though Brogdon wasn't putting up crazy numbers on the offensive end of the floor, we were scoring and we were beating good teams. I mean, that Iowa State game in the Sweet 16 was a tough game, and they really they took care of teams with a lot of NBA players. And so Tony Bennett was making adjustments to other teams, making adjustments to his players and his style of play. And I don't know if it's just a lack of familiarity with the guys that he has on Tony's part. Maybe next year or the year after he'll be able to know exactly what to do when these guys when they just blanket Isaac McNealy all over the floor no matter what he's doing. But the adjustments don't it doesn't feel like the adjustments have happened, at least on the offensive end. And then for whatever reason, the defensive end, it's just watching the defensive end fall apart is a very difficult thing for a Virginia fan to watch.
No, that's hard. And I mean, we sort of started this episode, you right off the bat, like, how can this be? Like, even if we're going through scoring drafts, which we don't want to see, but how can we go through the defensive lapses? And I'm sure, Coach Bennett's saying the same thing. Like, what can I do to get more consistency there? And
But it feels often like when he talks after the press, at the after game pressers, it feels like he describes a lot of things as sort of execution issues rather than schematic issues. And J Huff had trouble with the hard hedge too. Okay, J Huff, great player, great defensive player, had a lot of trouble with the hard hedge, and we adjusted the way we were playing him. And the result was one of the best defensive teams that Tony has ever fielded in the year after the national championship. And God knows what would have happened to that team if we had actually been able to see an NCAA tournament. I mean, you had three of the most elite shot blockers that Virginia has ever fielded on the court at the same time. And that, in part, I think, is why Kihei Clark's defense was so otherworldly that year. At least compared to what we saw from him in the years after, is Kihei Clark, very good on-ball defender, but he could be especially aggressive when he knew he had the three best shot blockers in the ACC behind him. But that was an adjustment. We didn't have J Huff going out there and hedging all the way to the logo. I'm just not sure what kinds of adjustments we've made for Blake Buchanan and Jordan Minor are different players and different defenders with different strengths and different weaknesses, but we just do not seem to have been able to figure out how to deal with the ball screen action with either of those in the blowouts. Things have just gotten out of hand with high ball screens over and over again, and that feels like something that Tony has experience dealing with. That he ought to be able to figure out, right? And that he's famous for being stubborn and inflexible when you want to describe being consistent in a negative way, right? He didn't have J Huff hard hedge all the time, right? Like that was an adjustment that was made to deal with the strengths and weaknesses of that player, and you can imagine him coming up with some good adjustments for the guys on this team. It just hasn't happened late in the season. And I think that's one reason why the late season breakdowns have happened defensively. I mean, it's not just that the guys miss shots and then sort of lose confidence in their ability to play on the defensive end. There's an adjustment that needs to be made that hasn't happened. And it's, I think, particularly on the ball screen stuff, it's been clear since the Pitt game. That's been a while at this point.
What are we gonna
I'd
do,
love to see
right?
it.
I get the last point. I think that we haven't really brought up is just once, you know, our weekly tradition of talking about the conference as a whole, and what a weird year it has been to talk about the ACC as a whole. You know, the talking heads or and the metrics would support that it's a massively down year for some way. You know, I watch a Pitt game and you're like, how is Pitt not a top 25 team? Well, they've strung some miserable losses throughout this year as well too. I feel like the whole conference is dealing with this, like, not playing up to its potential. And they're playing each other, so you know, if they're playing good, like, you know, you beat each other up. It happens. It's every year in the ACC. I don't know. You know, Duke and Carolina, I think it'll be interesting to see their closing game, because I think Duke is playing massively better than UNC is. I think UNC is getting the headlines for the record and being at top of the conference. But right now, if I were filling out brackets, I'd be looking at the Blue Devils in March, carrying the ACC tournament or the ACC banner throughout the tournament. But
Pains me to say it, but I agree.
yeah,
I
I
much preferred to see North Carolina do well than to see Duke do well.
yeah.
When we're picking between,
Yeah, and Syracuse somehow up here, it just boggles the mind. But anyway, I say all that to say that again, Virginia is likely here in the top four where we want them to be in one of the name brand conferences in this sport. And instead of feeling happy about that, we're all, you know, frustrated with the losses, and rightfully so, in the way that they've lost it, but also the entire conference is sort of frustrated with its perception and
Look at
not
Notre
playing up to
Dame.
the potential. Yeah,
Notre
figure
Dame
Notre
has
Dame's
massive.
good when you're playing them in any Indiana at least. So
They just beat Clemson and Wake. I
yeah.
mean, they have an elite point guard.
Yeah,
Burton
yeah.
is going to be real trouble next year. And I mean, I think Notre Dame is going to be a real handful over the next couple of years. But I think the overall, it's interesting to see how much the media focuses on the ACC's inconsistency and not on inconsistency in college basketball overall. I think part of that's driven by metrics, which I have some issues with. But well, I mean, look, I mean, the KenPom stuff, it's useful as it can inform you about how teams are playing. Measuring the efficiency of each possession, there's utility to that.
Yeah.
But I particularly the way Ken himself defends it, as if like his metrics, correspond to the image in God's mind of college basketball. I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous. They call it a predictive metric. Okay, well, so
Right.
what happens when the predictions don't come true?
Right,
Is it
right.
because the team outplayed the correct metric, or is it because the metric was wrong? I mean, there is no independent standard by which to evaluate that.
Yeah.
So it's you play the games and the
Yeah.
winners win the games. That's how you evaluate basketball teams.
I wonder
And
what the committee feels, you know, like you try and guess this shadow committee that makes decisions every year. We come out with you know, the bracket comes out and people are like, what were they looking at for these couple of teams? You hope that doesn't impact Virginia in a negative way.
Well, I mean, for the efficiency metrics, were good for Virginia in
Almost always.
yeah, for much of the like KenPom era.
Right.
I do think teams have started playing to the metrics in a way that Virginia hasn't adjusted for, and I also think this so the metrics have become less valuable as teams have been like, okay, well, we know we have to win some blowouts early on.
Right.
And I think people forget that the adjustments in KenPom are made over the course of the season, so winning the blowouts early on makes your stuff look better in real time. It's not just that they average things over the
Yeah.
course of the year.
Yeah.
There's also but last year the ACC did very poorly in non-conference. So you could understand why the narrative took over that the ACC was terrible. The ACC did quite well in non-conference this year. It was 9-3 against the Big 12, which is ostensibly the best conference in college basketball. We tied the SEC, which I think is the best conference in college
Ooh, hot
basketball,
take.
in easily. We tied them in the ACC SEC
Right.
Challenge, and we tied them at weird places in the conference. It wasn't just the teams at the top beating up on teams at the bottom.
Right.
And yet, over the course of the season, the narrative has taken over that the ACC is terrible. And look, when Virginia looks bad, we do not help that narrative.
That is very true.
Especially if we end up, finishing third in the conference. I mean, this team that loses seven games by like 25 points, I mean, that does not help. We don't
Yeah.
look like a college basketball team when we lose. So I think that's part of the problem. I also think the ACC is used to having Hall of Fame coaches out there in the media hyping it. I mean,
Yeah.
it peak
Yeah.
Tony Bennett era, Tony Bennett was acing Coach K. He was acing Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim in his late prime, but in his prime, I mean, Jim Boeheim went to the Final Four one year, right? I mean, over us. And Rick Pitino right after a national championship. I mean, Rick Pitino couldn't buy a win against Virginia, and he tried.
Literally.
cost him his job.
I like that argument about though the coaching cachet on the mic, carries some weight. It is odd, yeah.
But Virginia losing bad hurts. It hurts
Yeah,
because
for
it's
sure.
always at the
It hurts the
it's at the top
metrics.
of the it hurts the metrics, and it hurts the eye test because it's not just that we're winning ugly, we're losing really ugly.
Yeah, Big Monday in Blacksburg, and that's the game that's on, and so people tune in, and goodness.
Virginia Duke's supposed to be a marquee matchup. It is every
Yeah.
year, not this year.
Yeah.
So I do think actually Virginia's performance has been part of the narrative about the ACC
Yeah, makes sense.
and not in a helpful way.
Yeah.
But I also think there're going to be some really good ACC teams in the tournament, and they're going to do really well once again. I mean, the ACC just can't stop sending teams to the Final Four. At some point, hopefully people will start paying attention to that
There
in the
you
media.
go.
My dog feels very strongly about this too. I don't know
Yeah.
if
Well, all right, here, last question before you can go attend to him. See a lot of people on the message boards or Twitter or whatever saying, well, I hope they don't even make the tournament, which stupid, shut up. It's good if they make the tournament, even if they're playing poorly. But my question for you, they make the tournament as one of those play-in 11 seeds. Sneaky good thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I
I mean,
agree.
at least get
Good
a
chance for a win.
win.
If you lose, that like, yeah, it's we're not even mad by Thursday. Now it's like, all right, let's sit down. Our teams, we do away with any sort of like, God, I gotta stress about Virginia playing tonight, and I can't even enjoy these games. If you win, how many times do we see these major conference underachieving borderline teams win that game and then go on a run to the Sweet 16? I feel like it happens pretty frequently. Like to your point, you can't get upset because you're going to be the low seed. I
Nothing to
think,
lose.
obviously, best case scenario is they magically start playing well. There's no reason that that can't happen if they start playing well, if they start making shots and locking in on defense like we've seen them do. It would be pretty fun if they get that 11 seed to get that win, get the monkey off their back a little bit, and then go in and play a 6 seed who's not going to be any better than Virginia, and then go from there.
As a fan, half of the enjoyment of watching Virginia has been the fact that Virginia has been perceived as an underdog for a very long time. And so to actually be an underdog, I think you get a lot of the benefit of the glory years in that. I think just making the tournament in any fashion, I think would be a nice way to send off the guys who are who are not coming back this year. It'd be really nice for the transfers who came in for a year. I think it would vindicate recruiting, for a lot of those guys. And I look, if the defense comes together, this is a very frustrating team to play. And
For
outside of
sure.
the ACC, there aren't a whole lot of teams that have experience dealing with that.
Yeah.
So yes, it's very clear Virginia could go on a little run. I don't know if we're a Final Four capable
No,
team
no,
this
no,
year,
no. Yeah.
but sure, win a couple of games and go home happy. That seems totally viable, and at the very least, nothing to lose.
And you add a counter argument to the argument that Virginia chokes every March. I mean, obviously, we have the massive counter argument of a national freaking championship, so shut up. But anyway, the Furman game really didn't help in this decade-long conversation about this program. So even if it's a play-in game and then you hope maybe being able to beat a six seed in the next game, then you're going, what do you, they won their first two games last year when we're talking about it next year. So opportunity for that. To me, that's better than being the 8-9. Obviously losing that one would be a bummer. Losing the play-in 11 matchup would be a bummer. But what would really be a bummer is watching them lose by 60 against Houston. You know, that would not be fun for anybody involved in the sport except for maybe the Houston Cougars. So
Even there. Remember how bad we lost to Florida in
yeah.
London's last
Oh
year?
yeah.
That felt terrible. That was
Yeah.
it was not a pleasant thing.
A 7-10 game.
And it looked like the next year we were screwed because London was the best thing about that team, right?
There you go.
And
And
yet
yet.
the best teams that Tony Bennett has fielded were still in the future. They were right, it was
Yeah.
right around the corner. So I think we're gonna
There
have a
you
lot of returning
go.
talent next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are two guys who have been redshirted this year who were,
Very true.
have had a year in the program. And we have guys coming in, we shooters.
Yeah.
Sharma's a shooter. Kofi's a scorer. There's a lot to look forward to. Going, I mean, I look, this is a podcast for fans. I'm a fan. I'm
Yeah.
not going to pretend that I'm not looking on the bright side here.
That's what we do here.
If you run off a couple of wins in to close out the regular season and win a game or two in the tournament, this would be a wonderfully successful rebuilding year, with a lot of pieces that you can look forward to for the years ahead. And I still think, a coach I wouldn't trade for anybody in the world.
Sure. Well, well said, well finished. Thank you for injecting some optimism into the end of the episode again. We tried to start that way, and I appreciate what you said. Very thoughtful, and I like that. So I hope that helped you all listening at home for sure. Zach, thank you for joining me. I said at the beginning, I said all these things: alum, fan, returning guest of the podcast, friend. I forgot to mention recording artists of our intro and outro music, composer and performer. So thank you for that as well.
I can't shoot, but I do a lot of the little things well, right?
A role player here in the speaking lawn life, but thanks again for joining us. Of course, we'll have you back sometime soon, hopefully. So yeah.
Thanks so much for having me, Pierce.
All right, everybody, stay tuned to streakinglaw.com for obviously your pre-Georgia Tech and during Georgia Tech and post-Georgia Tech, hopefully celebration, and then we'll get into ACC tournament coverage. Until next time, for everybody at the blog, I'm Pierce. Go Hoos.